Thanks for listening to Musings of an ADD Mind. Let's get some warnings out of the way. This episode may contain strong language, and the views and opinions expressed by the guest and host in no way, shape, or form represent the Oklahoma Historical Society or the state of Oklahoma.
Welcome to the Musings of an ADD Mind podcast. This is your host, Jack, and I have the ADD Mind. And back after a major long delay of not being on the podcast, we have my son, Duncan. Yay!
Yeah! Hello, everyone. Hello, son. It is me, Duncan.
Yes, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
I knew the answer for that, actually, but that was for the listeners.
Yeah.
So here we are. Last year, Duncan was my first guest when we discussed music at the end of the month. And this year, we're talking movies and TV shows. So I felt that Duncan had to be the first guest of season two talking about that for the last episode of the month. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. So Duncan is here to talk about Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yes. What else is there to talk about?
Which is his favorite show ever. He yes. still watches it on every chance he gets. And
I actually have it playing in the background right now.
Yeah. And then he's also going to discuss his favorite movie of all time, which is...
Well, you got me in a tough spot because you asked me favorite movie of all time. That is an insanely difficult thing to pick out. So I sort of went with the aesthetic that I really like of certain things, and something that, you know, I can watch it several times and I'm happy watching it each time.
Right.
And it engages me fully. So I'm talking about the 1997 film, which is Event Horizon. If you know directors, it's Paul W.S. Anderson. I don't know directors. That's the guy.
Yeah. I believe he's responsible for the Resident Evil films.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I believe so. Don't quote me on that, folks.
That's pretty cool. Let's see here. All right. He has done, let's go on filmography. So he did the Mortal Kombat in 1995, that really bad one.
Yep. Right.
He did the Resident Evils. He did the new Monster Hunter that came out, which was not great, but whatever. He did the Alien versus Predator that came out in 2004.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. That was a great one.
Yeah.
He did the Death Race 2, 3, and 4. Direct to video ones. So it seems like he's not, a lot of the stuff he's made isn't exactly great, but good enough. Although I would say that Event Horizon is excellent.
Right.
And not just good enough. Some interesting things about Event Horizon. This is a slight hearsay, but not quite. So he, I believe in an interview or two, somebody asked him what was his inspiration for it, or the writer or whatever. And so it was actually, the writer, asked the writer, and the inspiration for it, it's loosely based off of the franchise Warhammer 40,000, which is grimdark. It's set in the far flung future, you know, the 42nd millennium. It's super grimdark. It's very edgy. It's over the top in every aspect.
Okay.
And so it's a lot of the fans of 40K, which is what it's called. It's sort of like the unofficial, It's like an unofficial movie of humanity discovering what's in 40K known as like a warp drive. They refer to it in Event Horizon as the gravity drive, which makes sense, whatever. And I guess we can do like a brief synopsis of the movie. That'd probably be a good thing to do.
Yeah. The strange thing is, Duncan, you probably don't even remember this. So when that movie came out, I had just gotten out of Oklahoma, or of the Army. We just moved back to Oklahoma, is what I meant to say. And my papa was working at a movie theater. He was basically retired, and he ran the projection or the projectors at a movie theater. And that meant, unless it was opening night, I got to go see whatever movie I wanted to go see.
Nice.
And this was pre-Emily, and I was off of work one day, and Event Horizon was at the theater. Misty was at school, and you didn't go to school yet, and it was just you and I hanging out. And I mean, you were still a baby. You were, I guess, one-ish.
Yeah.
I'm not somewhere, because it came out in 97, you said? Yeah, so you were one plus some months, whatever. And I was like, oh, he's going to be... I just looked and figured out, okay, his nap time is at this. The movie starts at this time. I have to be home by this time to get Emily from or Misty from school. So you and I went and watched Event Horizon.
Nice.
Now you slept through it and I watched the movie, but you actually saw that film in theaters.
Look at that, awake. Everyone.
When you were awake.
Oh man, that's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah. See, there you go. You picked a good movie to pick.
You know, that's probably one of the first films I ever watched.
Close. Actually, your mom and I always took you guys to movies when you were young. We would just sort of schedule it around nap times so that you would be used to going to movies. But by the time you were three or four, you guys would go to a movie and you would just sit there quietly and watch the whole movie because you'd been going to movies since day one. So
nice. Okay.
So yeah. And of course, 99 was the summer of the Phantom Menace.
Yes.
Because my dad still worked at a movie theater, just a different one. And every day when you were picked up from daycare, you would say, "Dad, are we going to go watch Star Wars?" and you know, there were a lot of days we couldn't, but there were a lot of days that we would. So you and I actually watched The Phantom Menace in theaters probably 20-25 times because it was free and you loved going to see it. And if nothing else was going on and if your mom was okay with it, you and I just go and watch it.
Nice.
So yeah, okay. There's that. But anyway,
that's how you end up, you know, being able to say Darth Sidious and not dump truck.
Exactly. Exactly. That is very, very true. And maybe at a different date, we'll explain to the listeners what that actually means. No, you know what? Let's just do it now.
Yeah, why not?
When Duncan was a young lad, there were certain sounds that he had troubles with. And one of those would be the tr sound. For example, his Aunt Tracy was his Aunt Facey. That also meant that Duncan was not capable of saying the word truck. He would pronounce it as fuck. And when he also was not properly able to pronounce the word dump, and that was pronounced as dumb. So anytime Duncan saw a dump truck, he would always point that out to us by yelling, "Dump fuck, dump fuck, dump fuck." Now, of course, that was always funny, except for that one day when we were in Toys R Us and there was a toy dump truck and Duncan starts going, "Dump fuck, dump fuck, dump fuck." And the lady standing next to me jaw drops as she thinks Duncan is calling her a dumb fuck. And I am sitting there going, "Yes, son, that is a dump truck."
Look, got to start talking trash at a young age. All right.
Yeah. So that was fun. But strangely enough, at that same time, he legitimately could say Darth Sidious without any troubles whatsoever. And Senator Palpatine and
probably, you know, all of them.
He was raised. Clearly, he had some excellent parenting going on. So
I think that's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, there's some fun things about Duncan and I that now our listening friends will can chuckle about. So yeah. I guess we should get back on the topic and talk about the space horror movie Event Horizon.
Yes. So as I mentioned, you know, Warhammer 40,000 sort of was an unofficial inspiration for it. So a lot of my enjoyment of the movie, I saw it before I started getting into like the lore of Warhammer and everything of a 40K. Yeah. Clearly. But, you know, in a actual recollection.
Yeah.
So I had watched it. And then I started getting into 40K and I loved it even more, just sort of connecting all of the like lore from 40K into it. But even without, you know, having that love of 40K and everything, it is a really excellent movie. So I think the starring, so it had, Lawrence Fishburne in it, Sam Neill, Kathleen Quillane, Joey Richardson. I really only Lawrence Fishburne is who I.
Well, Sam Neill is Dr. Grant from the Jurassic Park movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jolie Fisher is Princess Leia's real life sister, half sister. Okay. Also, Princess Leia is also referred to as Carrie Fisher, which should make that connection a little more obvious since they have the same last name. And Kathleen, what is it? Quiglin, whatever.
Quillane, something like that.
Yeah,
Quillane.
She's in, she is actually in the Doors movie, the autobiography that Oliver Stone did of Jim Morrison. I can't think of the character that she plays in that movie other than she was the journalist that Jim Morrison had an affair with. And then when, anyway, that's the character she played. Okay. I don't know any of the other characters that or actors that are in it. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Those are the ones that were starring. It did have a very small cast, which is one thing I really enjoy about in movies whenever the cast, you know, is like not even 10 people. So it is set in 2047. It follows a crew of astronauts. At this time, humanity is, they've colonized the moon, not terraform or anything, but it's mentioned that, you know, the moon has been colonized. There's more mining and sort of the space aspect of humanity is being expanded upon. So they set out to answer like a distress beacon,
right?
Which later in the film it is learned that it is the Event Horizon, which is a science ship that is in the orbit around Neptune. So they are sent to sort of try and search for signs of life. If they can find people, bring them back and recover data. So at this point in humanity, we're still using traditional means of travel, regular engines and everything for space travel, like regular thrusters. And it is learned that, what was it? Sam Neill, his character, he made the ship and he created the central drive for the ship, the propulsion unit, which is that gravity drive.
The gravity drive allows for FTL, right? Faster than light propulsion.
Yeah, and it uses the theory that he built it off of was the crumpling of space and then just sort of skipping, you know, where you're traveling a reduced distance. But it's learned throughout the film that that is not the case. It is actually going into an alternate dimension and traveling through that. In the film, I love this. So all of the horror aspects of it, it's told through the perspective of people that have seen the horrors. The drive
through the other dimension is what you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes.
Let me interrupt real quick.
Yeah, go
ahead. I haven't seen Event Horizon in many, many, many years.
Yeah.
Do the special effects hold up?
Honestly, they're not bad at all. I think it was probably one of the first that was using like CGI.
Right.
So it's clearly a product of the time.
Right.
The CGI is not very detailed, but for things that do need to be detailed, they use practical effects.
Okay.
So most of it is still actual, you know, stage work, practical effects. It's mainly the outside, or like, you know, at one point, like a window breaks and a character goes flying. So that point in the movie, that is CGI.
Okay.
That the CGI is a bit rough just because, you know, it was 97, but right. All the practical effects are excellent.
Okay. All right. Anyway, back to your story. I just wanted people to know, if they were listening, you know, sometimes people think to themselves, oh, this, it's a space movie. It was from this time. The CGI is going to suck, that it holds up, or the special effects are going to suck.
Yeah.
So that sometimes people are weird and make decisions based off something like that. So I wanted them to know, it holds up.
The CGI is rough. It's not very detailed, but they use it where they should. And not for everything. They didn't lean really heavy in it.
Okay. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, now.
Back to you. So, yeah. One of the things, because it is sort of like a sci-fi horror. You never see what's on the other side. That right. is never a thing that happens. And the more you watch, and it goes further into it, and it goes into... Sam Neill's character sort of goes crazy, and he talks about how the ship brought back, it was just a ship before it left, but whenever it came back, it was no longer just a ship. It had like the energies, or like a spirit or so, to right. say, from that realm. And it's really cool. I love the storytelling. They leave what needs to be vague. They're sparing where they should be, which I love. I think that's very important in horror movies, to not just explain away everything. There should be mystery. Nothing should really be fully explained.
Right.
After all, the scariest thing is the unknown, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just overall, I think it's an excellent film. The acting's good. The practical effects are excellent when they're used, right. which is for most of it. But, you know, they're sparing for the most part anyways, as horror movies should be. And yeah, just the overall aesthetic of it's really solid. It's good.
That's cool.
Yeah. And also, you should just watch Event Horizon. There's absolutely no reason not to.
I concur.
Yeah. One of the sad things is, since you know, we live in the time where streaming services are now like cable, where you have to pay for each package.
Right.
The only way to watch it is through Showtime, if you choose to go through that route. You could probably pick up a DVD of it for pretty cheap.
Isn't Showtime and Paramount the same parent company? Do you think it might be on Paramount? Paramount. Yeah, the one that used to be CBS, because CBS and Showtime, I think, were the same, owned by the same company.
Let me do the where to watch real quick, and we'll figure it out. All right. Just watch. So it looks like... Oh, I forgot, this site sucks. All right. Based on Google here... yeah, it's on Paramount Plus. Okay.
All right.
You can watch it through Paramount.
Cool. I got it right.
Yeah, you did.
My memory didn't fail me for once.
But yeah, you should watch the film. It's an excellent film. And, you know, if you want to get real deep into the weeds on why I really love the film, it being like unofficial, you know, 40K, you can get into that or not. That's quite the rabbit hole.
Right.
It's quite the rabbit hole. But yeah, it's they do it very, very well. The sci-fi horror.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I've always enjoyed Event Horizon, and I was always slightly disappointed that it didn't do better in theaters, because strangely enough, I always felt that there was enough in that movie for there to be a second movie.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I looked a bit more on like the Wikipedia page on it, and it turns out, you know, like any good movie, it doesn't do well in theaters, and then as soon as it hits DVDs, it gets a cult following.
Right.
And that's how Event Horizon was. It definitely didn't do well, hit DVD, did very well, and now it's a staple in the 40K fandom, because it is considered unofficial canon.
That's cool. I never knew that about it, but that's really cool.
It's really cool. A great thing about 40K is it's incredibly vague, so it works in the timeline because of how vague the timeline is.
Yeah. When vague timelines collide.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent movie. And of course, you know, the Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne just do an excellent job.
Right. Well, I mean, they're both excellent actors. So
exactly. You can't go wrong. If anything, you know, you don't have to be concerned about the five or six actors in it being bad, because none of them are.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. All right, folks. That's it. It's the official recommendation of the Musings of an ADD Mind podcast. Go and watch the movie Event Horizon.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 would watch again.
Exactly. Exactly. So I appreciate you sharing that, Duncan, because I honestly always enjoyed the movie. I just haven't thought about it in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. You should give it a watch.
No, I want to go watch it again, and I'm going to.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to pick up a disc copy of it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So with that, it's my turn, unless you have something else to add.
No, otherwise we're going to be sitting here for, you know, 6 to 8 hours with me just binging on and spewing 40K.
Okay, well, yeah, that's a whole other series of podcasts. So we will move on to mine. And I also could have talked movies or whatever, but I have decided to start off with what is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. And that is the re-imaged Battlestar Galactica that came out in roughly 2003-ish, 2004. It started out as a miniseries on Sci-Fi. I do not know if at the time it was a situation where they would decided, let's see how the miniseries does, and maybe we'll do a couple miniseries to tell the story. If it does sort of okay, but if it does super duper okay, we'll make it into a TV show. I'm not entirely sure how that thought process went, but it did go on to become a TV show. And it is an excellent TV show with excellent writing. And it is essentially modern issues at the time that just happened to be told through the filter of taking place in space.
Yes. I should rewatch it.
Oh, yeah, you definitely should. So, you know, at this point, the reimaged Battlestar Galactica is damn near 20 years old. And of course, the original one is 40. The original one is got a lot of camp to it, but it's a product of the late 70s. So that would explain why. The reimaged actually lasted longer than the original did. I believe the original only had two seasons, and then there was the third season with the different cast of characters, except for Lorne Greene, that was called Battlestar 1980, or Battlestar Galactica 1980. The original Battlestar Galactica was brought into fruition by Larson. I can't think of his first name, but he's responsible for a lot of TV shows in the late 70s and early 80s, a lot of them. But the re-imaged was the head writer, showrunner, executive producer was Ronald D. Moore, who had got his start in Star Trek and is currently the head writer, executive producer, showrunner for Outlander. So he definitely is got a, you know, a pretty good resume.
Yeah.
But at the time, Battlestar Galactica was the first thing that he was sort of doing as his own, you know, head of everything, in charge of everything. The miniseries in the first season are amazing just in terms of the writing quality. Part of the reason why it hit home so well was they took sort of what had happened with 9/11 in a post-9/11 world. In obviously, some of the differences were that the Cylons were major, major baddies. And, you know, I feel like if this isn't given, you know, go watch it. I'm not going to give a lot away, but this is still spoilery. So basically, Battlestar Galactica starts out. There is the series of 12 worlds. Each world is named, is based on the zodiac sign. And so there are these 12 inhabited worlds, and one day the Cylons show up, who like 70 years ago we had been at war with because humans created them, and they went to war when the Cylons rebelled, and then the Cylons disappeared, and then they came back and they nuked everything and they killed something like 50 billion people across the 12 planets. And they completely destroyed the entire military fleet of the 12 colonies. That's what they were referred to as, because there was a planet called Kobol that they came from. And then they went and colonized these 12 planets. And there was a 13th planet that had been colonized that was called Earth. And this is also taken from the Bible, in that there were the 12 tribes of Israel. But if you know anything about the Bible, there were actually 13 tribes of Israel, because Joseph's tribe was actually split up and named amongst his two sons. So there were technically 13 tribes of Israel, and that's how that played out. And the Cylons not only nuked all of the planets and killed most of the population, they destroyed the entirety of the military except for one ship. And that would be the Galactica. Their spacecraft, their battle cruisers, were called Battlestars. And the Galactica was the one that was left. And the reason it survived is because it was the only ship left in the fleet that was pre-basic internet, I guess, in a way. Yeah. It wasn't all the other ships were connected, so they could just put in a code and turn all the other ships off. Well, the Galactica didn't have that issue. And actually, when the show starts, the Galactica was in the process of being retired and converted into a space museum. And so there was the Galactica and, I don't know, something like 70 other civilian ships that somehow survived. And then their goal is, we have to go on the run because now the Cylons are trying to kill us. So population goes from, I don't know, 20 billion, 40 billion, whatever that number is, down to 56,000 people.
Yes.
That is a huge, huge loss of humanity. And so they're outgunned, they're outnumbered, they're outmanned, they're out, they don't have food. How are they going to get away from these people that they're, or the Cylons that they're being chased from, and where are they going to go? And so basically the miniseries ends with the commander of the Galactica, Commander Adama, which, if people are unaware of this, Adama is actually Ethiopian for Adam, which is another biblical reference. And it ends with him saying, I've done research and I know where Earth is and we're going to go to Earth and join the 13th colony. Of course, when the series starts, you find out, wow, this is really cool. And the first episode, when it becomes a TV series, I believe is called, I think it's called like 29 or 31, something like that. And the premise is, so all of the ships have FTL, faster than light drives. And the thing is with the colonies, they really only used them occasionally. And so getting them used all of this time was something that didn't really happen. So they would FTL to the new location. They would be there for roughly whatever it was, 29 minutes, and then the Cylons would pop in. Well, as soon as they got there, they were immediately trying to put in new coordinates for the next jump, but it was something like a 4 or 5 minute lag in between when the other people showed up and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So the ships would have to go out and, or the fighters, and try to fight off the Cylons. And so everybody could get, you know, all of the civilian ships, because the Galactic is the only military craft, and it would basically run cover so all of the other ships could go to this next location. Well, the problem with that is civilian ships, different type of drive, some work faster than others. And so the Galactica's pilots would go out and fight off the Cylons, and then they'd have to immediately turn around, come in and land, so that the Galactica could then jump to the next location that they were going to. And as this had been going on for, at that point, I want to say at least a week or so, everybody's getting freaking exhausted because nobody can sleep. And the end of the story puts the president of the remaining 12 colonies, because there was a president, and this is actually sort of something that is kind of based in real life. The person that ended up being the president was the Secretary of Education, who was like 42nd in line of succession. So that tells you just how bad things have gone. And she basically kind of gets put into the position that George W. Bush was put on 9/11. And that was when they knew that there was the last plane that was coming to DC to fly into a building. They don't know if it was, you know, Congress, the White House, the Pentagon again. At this point, nobody knew where this plane was going. And George Bush had to make what was probably one of the hardest calls a president has had to make. I'm not going to say the hardest, but definitely one of the harder calls. And he had to scramble the U.S. Air Force fighter jets and tell them that when you encounter this plane, you have to blow it up. And that's what happens in this first episode, that the president has to make this call. And Adama, who's the military commander, feels that because it would require blowing up a civilian ship full of civilians, that they know this is the one that is the reason the Cylons are following them, is because there's an undercover Cylon. And they discover it by sending people to different locations, and where the Cylons show up, they can now narrow it down to, okay, we know it's part of this 10 ships. And so they figure out which one it is. And Adama is smart enough to realize that as the military commander, I cannot just authorize the blowing up of the civilian ship to save the rest of us. And that's where this decision sucks. To save the other 50,000 people, you have to destroy a ship that has like 400 people on it, whatever the number is. That part is irrelevant.
Yeah.
But to save the other 50, this horrible decision has to be made. And Adama realizes that as the military commander, the president has to make, he's not the one that makes that call. It's the president. And so the call is made and they stop getting immediately tracked like that. And that's how, you know, so the miniseries I think is 4 episodes, so at that point it's what, 4.5 hours, and then another 45 minutes of the first episode. So the first 6 hours of this show, it's just like one horrible thing going on after the other.
Yeah.
And of course, through the course of the show, various aspects of it change. After I want to say season 2, there was a writer's strike, and then the writer's strike ends, and then there was like a stagehand, stagecraft, whatever that proper term is, strike that happened again. And then there was sort of budgetary issues. And so season three, the story sort of changed up completely because they were on a planet that was sort of occupied. And then it's sort of what happens. It puts things through the viewpoint of being sort of a terrorist against the powers that be. It also has in it what after I watched a YouTube channel called Space Doc, which is a really cool YouTube channel. And the guy goes into Battlestar Galactica because it's one of his favorite shows. And I realized that at the end of that season, they made what was a massive, massive military mistake. I'm not going to go into it, but it was a massive mistake. There was a sacrifice that was made, and it should have been a different sacrifice that was made that would have made it better for them long term. And then season four went back sort of into space. And then season five rolled around. It was a shorter season, but there were a lot of aspects to how it ended that a lot of people did not like. I get it. I was personally okay with how it ended. Through the course of the series, you discover that the 13th colony, bad things had happened, and they are still nomadic, looking for a place to go. And they do, in fact, find a planet. But because of everything that happened, they're like, yeah, hey, let's just call it this. But I know, I understand why they ended it the way they did. I also understand why people were upset with the way that it ended. But at the same time, it was difficult because there was so much stuff to wrap up.
Yes. I personally liked the way it ended. I there's a lot to wrap up and you can't really cover it all unless you have like a 2.5 hour final episode. I'm also a big fan of like finality, where it ends and there's not really any continuation possible. And then I also like it whenever there is continuation possible and it's just dropped.
Yeah, they definitely built the story up so that there was definitely an endpoint that was a strong conclusion. But at the same time, there was just a crack in the window where there could have been a second part of that story. And a lot of the themes that are covered are sort of similar to how the original Star Trek was, in that it would sort of take these deep subjects and you didn't necessarily realize that it was talking about what it was talking about in the better episodes. Some of the Star Trek episodes, it was blatantly obvious what they were doing. But Battlestar Galactica is really crafted in a way that has what was going on at the time, but it didn't make light of it. It was incredibly serious, and it was just reimagined in a way that took place in space. And the other cool thing about this that I don't ever think gets enough sort of credit is I think one of the reasons that the military structure side of how Galactica operated worked so well is because Ronald D. Moore is a Navy veteran.
Oh yeah, that definitely helps.
And so because he came into it having an understanding of military, maybe not military, you know, the full scope, but once you've been in the military, you understand how the military works and how things are and how people act. And I definitely think that showed in the writing. Yeah. And it had excellent special effects. They still hold up pretty well for now. And it has one of my biggest likes about space special effects, because in space, vehicles don't move like they do in air. If you're in space and you want to turn left, you have a little jet on your right side that shoots out that makes the front of the ship turn left. If you want to go right, the opposite effect happens. And, you know, but not only that, if you want to go left, On the right-hand side at the front, a little jet shoots out, but on the left-hand side at the back, a little jet shoots out, and it shoots that, and that's what gets it going to where you need to go. And that is something that all of the fighters, aircraft, and everything maintain in that show. And plus, the re-imaged Galactica just looks like a fucking beast. There's a reason they referred to that model as the Alligator. That thing is just a beast. And when they start using the FTL drives and they're like, you know, we haven't really done this in 30 years. Is it even going to work? You know?
Yeah.
And so that was fantastic. And then they did a prequel, Caprica, and it was only one season long, but it is an excellent season. I highly recommend that because it completely sets up, you know, what happened 75 years in the future. And then there was also basically like a web series called Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome. And there's like 15 or 20 of those. Those aren't nearly as good, but it was a web series. So what are you going to do?
It's kind of expected.
But anyway, I love that show. It's an excellent show. I probably went from roughly 2010 through 2014, where I watched the entire thing every year. It was like a yearly thing for me.
We did that together. We'd watch that, and then we also had our Star Wars weekend and our Lord of the Rings weekend.
Yep, we did. As a matter of fact, I think it was 2011. Yeah, there was that giant blizzard that came through Oklahoma.
Yeah,
we didn't go to work. Everything was shut down for a week. Normally in Oklahoma, even if you get a foot of snow, it's all melted in 2 days. Well, this time it was just cold enough that the foot and a half of snow we got stayed for a solid week. And so there was no work, no school, nothing. And that's what Duncan and I did for that entire time. Yeah. Was we marathon Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I remember it. It was an excellent time. Cause it was, we'd like wake up, you know, like we'd have breakfast and everything, and then we'd watch Battlestar Galactica, then we'd have lunch and watch Battlestar Galactica, then we'd have dinner
and watch it till like 10 o'clock at night, and then get up in the morning because we knew there was nothing the next day, and repeat. But yeah, that was a fun time. It if you want to go and watch serious topics that are hidden in a space happening thing,
excellent.
It's well worth it.
Yeah. For me, I have a very difficult time like getting attached to characters.
Right.
I distinctly remember whenever we watched it, I would get attached to characters.
Right.
So if that's anything to say on the writing, because I can watch something and I don't care, you know.
Right.
But yeah, that show, every character, they write them so well. You know how whenever you watch some shows or something outside of the trope that the character is, there's not a character there?
Right.
In Battlestar Galactica, that is not a thing. The characters are living, they're breathing, and actual people instead of just whatever trope they are.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely for sure. One of the cool things is the actor that played Apollo in the original Battlestar Galactica ends up playing a pretty important character for the rest of the show. Obviously not the character he played in the first one. That was by a different actor. And one of the things they did, Edward James Olmos plays Commander Adama, later Admiral Adama, and his son is the character Apollo. And the actor that played Apollo, Jamie Bamber, has blue eyes. And Edward James Olmos, the entire show, wore blue contact lenses so that the color of his eyes would be the same as the actor that was playing his son. So there would be sort of this connection between the two of them. And I thought that was kind of a cool little detail that they did.
Yeah, that is a great detail.
And the other thing the reimaged Battlestar Galactica did in the first one, the character either had their rank, last name, Commander Adama, or their call sign, Apollo, Starbuck, you never knew their actual names. And in the reimaged one, they gave everybody their name. In the original one, it was just Colonel Ty. In the reimaged, it was Colonel Saul Ty. And that was something that they did that just added this, that little bit more to the show. And so, yeah, and if you,
yeah,
go ahead.
I, again, just the attention to detail to the show, like you mentioned, having thrusters on all axes is super important. It, you know, and since they are going for a pretty serious show, the fact that they went into that level of detail should really just tell you, like, it's worth watching. It's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another detail I like is that rather than lasers, they use bullets.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of a cool route to go.
And I remember they, if I recall correctly, they never really do long distance shooting because it's more or less impossible.
It depends on, I guess, your definition of long distance shooting.
So
they're not like it stationed at Pluto shooting to Mars, but they are within.
Well, they're
40, yeah, a mile.
They never shoot past, like, you know, a couple miles.
Right.
Which in space is nothing. It's still a lot if you actually get into the math of it, because all the propagation changes for your rounds and it's a lot. But, you know, for ship on ship combat, it's not like you would think with, like, naval combat, because with naval combat, the distance isn't as extreme. You know, if like take Star Wars, for example, right? Whenever they're shooting at each other, it's like several hundred miles plus.
Sometimes.
It depends, but
they are not several hundred miles apart at the Battle of Coruscant, the Battle of Endor, the Battle of Scarif.
Well, you get what I mean, though. With a lot of space shows, they'll have them shooting and, you know, they're like 1,000 miles apart. You can't do that.
Right.
And that's why they use lasers, because
lasers move faster than bullets. Right.
Yeah. But yeah. I love that they use ballistic weapons in it.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. I definitely give Battlestar Galactica a 9.6 stars out of 10 stars. And some of that is only because there are some things that were in the miniseries that they just completely abandoned for the series, which is fine. And the last season does have a few things that I probably could have used a couple more episodes. It might have been a bit rushed, but otherwise, you know, still that's a hell of a rating.
Yeah, you know, I think I would agree with your rating.
So
yeah.
All right. Now, Dunk, we're gonna throw the ball to you. What's the TV show that you would like to discuss?
Yeah. So unintentionally keeping within the space theme here, I will be talking about the 2003 Star Wars, The Clone Wars. So
the Jenny Tarkadian that's the minis, that each one is like a 3-4 minute episode long one. I just want to clarify for the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. The Gennady, Tartakovsky.
Right.
However you say his name, the same guy who did Samurai Jack.
Yes.
That one where all the episodes are like 10 minutes, if that. So one of the cool things about it, and I remember this because we watched it together, in between the Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith, they had released this along with the movie.
Right.
And so I like it more than the 3D one, whether that be nostalgia or what, but it pieces in perfectly. You know, it's very short. It fits that timeline to sort of explain that gap. And I really like, so it is a different take on Star Wars because it's less of the, you know, sci-fi opera sort of that Star Wars is. Right. That's kind of what Star Wars is.
It's pretty much pure. It's more military. It's almost like a military film or a war.
It really is. So I think getting Gennady whatever to do it is, it was an excellent choice, because if you guys have seen like Samurai Jack, you know, there's not a lot of dialogue.
Right.
And considering, yeah, it is kind of a military thing because it's the Clone Wars.
Right.
They're at war. It is a show about war.
And yes,
it's Star Wars, but that's what it is. So in a lot of the episodes, in fact, I'll use the one. So if you remember the character, Ace Ventress? Is that her name?
Aj Ventress.
Yeah.
Yes. It explains how she comes around. That particular series of Clone Wars is this weird mix of kind of canon, but kind of not canon. It introduces Aj Ventress. It introduces General Grievous. It explains General Grievous's cough in Revenge of the Sith. As a matter of fact, it ends about 45 minutes before Revenge of the Sith begins.
Yeah. I consider it canon. I know the 3D one sort of took its place. But I consider it canon just because it's kind of a movie in between those,
right?
Considering the series and the movie, it's kind of an in-between movie. And since it is it's all about war the entire time, the lack of dialogue is excellent. And the example that I'll use is whenever Aj Ventress and Anakin fight. Spoilers, they fight.
With lightsabers. Imagine that.
So I watched the entire episode, and it's a beautiful episode, and very excellently done. The whole series is very, very good. Including the like screams of the clone troopers when they die and their commands and stuff. There's 25 lines of dialogue, including those. There's 25 right. lines of dialogue for the 10-minute episode. And I love it because it sort of works on the fact that, because, you know, you watch shows and a lot of them rely on dialogue to explain things.
Right.
And it relies on showing you and
that right.
you'll get the picture, which I love because it's I feel like it promotes like active watching instead of just a more passive where, you know, you listen to the dialogue.
Right, right.
And it relies on the art of it all to explain and show everything. And it's really good.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. I agree with you. I occasionally fire those up and watch them because they were also short. Some of them were like 3 minutes. Some of them were 10 minutes. It was sort of an odd thing to do at the time.
And yeah.
I want to say it was two seasons of it sort of. And when you put them all together, it basically ends up being like an hour-long movie, really, with just not a whole lot of dialogue to it. And there are some really pretty cool things to it.
Yeah. So I looked it up on the Wikipedia page. Season 1 and 2, the episodes had a runtime of 3 to 5 minutes. And then
okay.
season 3, and it stopped on 3. Was 12 to 15 minutes, and there were 25 episodes.
Okay.
So, yeah. All right. Not much there.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, though, while we're talking Clone Wars, I really do enjoy the 3D, the second Clone Wars series that came out. I believe it started in 07. James Arnold Taylor, who voices Obi-Wan Kenobi, does an excellent job. Matt Lautner, that voices Anakin, does an excellent job. It really fills in a lot of the gaps between Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith, in the fact that they ended up getting, really, there's the 7th season, which is considered the final, but in all honesty, it's really 6.5, because it got Disney bottom, and they just stopped with whatever they had of season 6, and they didn't finish producing the cartoon. And then season 7 came out a year and a half ago. The character, so the first season, the writing is not quite as strong as later. Dave Filoni, who was the head writer and show runner, he was basically George Lucas's apprentice. But in that first season, it was his first time being the head writer, the showrunner, you know, making sure the animation and all of that was done. And that's kind of a big task for something that you've never done before.
Yeah.
But everything that happened, George Lucas knew about and was in on. And in all honesty, the character of Ahsoka Tano has perhaps one of the best story arc slash developments of a character in fiction. When the Clone Wars movie came out initially, they took what was the first three or four episodes and made it into a movie that was released in theaters. People hated Ahsoka. They hated that character. They hated her. Season two, people started to like her. By the end of, before it got canceled by Disney, her character was probably every bit as beloved as Obi-Wan and Anakin was.
Yeah.
And then when season seven came out, which sort of wrapped everything up, and season seven, as a matter of fact, there are parts of season seven that is the continuation of events that are in Revenge of the Sith. There's that example where they're having the big war meeting with all of the generals and all those people are in 3Ds. Ahsoka's on the other side of their conference thing that's going on. It's both ahead of, concurrent, and right after, especially the last four or five episodes. And the character of Ahsoka is beloved. And at the end of that show, you're just like, you feel so bad for her. It's so horrible. And then, of course, when they bring her back in Rebels and Ahsoka has her duel with Vader, that, until this season of Obi-Wan, was probably the most emotional duel with Vader in terms of emotions. Now, in Revenge of the Sith, obviously, his duel with Obi-Wan is also very emotional, but it's a different type of situation than when Ahsoka fights him in Rebels.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a cartoon, you're just like, God damn, this hit hard. And then, of course, this season of Obi-Wan, you know, episode six, if you didn't get misty-eyed watching that, you don't.
So I haven't watched it yet.
But you need to.
Yeah, I do.
You need to.
I was waiting till they finished.
You need to. But anyway, just on that simple aside, Ahsoka Tano went from being so annoying to she has become such a fan favorite that she has her own live action series coming out next year. And she's played in live action by Rosario Dawson, which is cool because she's a great actress, but she was also fan cast. There were some people that just sort of noticed that she kind of bore a resemblance to Ahsoka, and people started photoshopping her to look like Ahsoka Tano. And then some people sent it to Rosario Dawson, and she's like, hell yeah, I'm down for that. And then it got to the Lucasfilm, and they were like, oh, these fans are onto something. And so that was cool. And then another cool thing also on the Clone Wars, while we're on the subject, there's a character called Bo-Katan Kryze, and they wanted, and this ties into Battlestar Galactica, they wanted Katie Sackhoff to voice the character. And so they asked, you know, they're in negotiations, how all that crap works. And they're like, yeah, we want you to voice the character. She's like, okay. And then they're like, well, can we make her look like you? She was like, yeah, sure. So they make the character, you know, look like her. And keep in mind, this is pre-Disney Star Wars. So what happens in season two of Mandalorian? They decide they're going to take Bo-Katan from cartoon to live action. And they immediately, without hesitation, called Katie Sackhoff. And Katie Sackhoff was like, hell yeah. And so she is played by Katie Sackhoff in the cartoon and in live action. So it's got to be a rare case of the same person voicing in two different mediums. But had they decided they didn't want to make her look like Katie Sackhoff, they wouldn't have been able to have done that. So that was a strange bit of luck that happened in, you know, 2009 or whatever it was. They just happened really to funny. Luck out. Yeah, that's who they decided to go with. So, but I didn't mean to steal your thunder on.
No, it's okay.
I think they do tie in.
Good point. So I think they both do an excellent job of filling the gap in different ways.
Right.
So the 2003 one, the 2D, does an excellent job of conveying the war and how it is a war.
Right.
And it is unpleasant. Also, it makes Mace Windu an absolute badass.
Yes, cool it does. Yeah.
And
yeah.
General Grievous is scary.
Yes.
You see him and you're like, holy shit.
Yes.
Oh God. So I think they both do an excellent job of that gap in different ways.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, there's not too much character building outside of, you know, it being a war and showing Obi-Wan and all the Jedi's being hardened. Outside of that, it doesn't do a lot of character building.
Right. And the 3D one has a ton of character building.
Yeah, it definitely focuses on that and it does an excellent job of it.
Yeah. It's definitely a great addendum. If you want to see how Anakin in Revenge of the Sith turned to the dark side as easily as he did, you almost need to go and watch all 7 seasons of Clone Wars and the 2D one as well, because it does an excellent job of filling in the whys and the toll it took on people.
I think that's why the 2D one is good, is because it expresses how he could turn to the dark side just due to the brutality of war.
Yeah.
Which makes a ton of sense, you know? That's a traumatizing thing. And if somebody turns to the dark side from it, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, I think they both do an excellent job just in different ways.
Yeah, they're just two different ways of telling a story that's part of a greater sum.
Yeah, and honestly, probably the pilot episode of the 3D had equivalent, if not more, dialogue than all 3 seasons of
it. it probably did. It probably did, and it also introduces why Obi-Wan was known as the Negotiator.
Yeah.
The Negotiator, General Kenobi.
Yes. That's about all I have to say on it. Otherwise, you know, we'll sit here talking about Star Wars forever,
which
I'd love.
We actually I'll talk to you about that in a sec. So anyway, I'm gonna go ahead. We've kind of reached the end point here of time for the episode. So Duck, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was super fun.
I appreciate you putting a little knowledge, truth into actual knowledge about space, because if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know that Duncan is actually in the space field. He is not an astronaut, but he knows a very large chunk about space and how things move in space and get to space.
It's true.
Things they do in space.
Also, I recommend people look up basic orbital dynamics, because it's actually really cool.
Yes.
Orbits are rad as fuck.
Right. And that is precisely what somebody in the space industry is supposed to say. That's part of your contracts.
I'm being honest. That frequent, it's all just really, really cool. We should do some episodes where we just talk about specific facets of space. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. If you didn't notice, based on the topic of this particular episode, Duncan may be a nerd.
Sadly, I think, that's finally come out.
Right. And with that, I'm going to wrap her up, folks. Appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you next month in October. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Duncan, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, of course.
It was nice watching your kitten Magnus attack crap behind you that you didn't know was going on.
Oh, I was looking.
And with that, everybody, I am going to say goodbye. And as always, remember, try to live your life in a way that would make Bob Ross proud.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Musings of an ADD Mind. If you enjoyed this podcast, or even if you didn't, please hit the subscribe or follow button. This podcast is a production of Hyper Focused Media.